welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by Coronation.com, part of the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm your host, Greg Mahochko, joined as always by our founder and fearless leader, John Damn Johnston. Hello, John.
Hi, Greg.
And joined again, as always, Todd Wolverton. What the hell's going on? What's so damn funny? Like, I'm just sitting here trying to open the show, and I see in my peripheral you two chowder heads just fucking laughing your asses off. What's up?
Todd was making gestures. we're both tan again. What do you want from us? It's the moment of senility.
All that's right.
Just need a little release.
From the stressful and busy work day.
I worked from home today because my portion of Illinois, we got a lot of frozen rain starting in the overnight hours and up until about 1 o'clock this afternoon. So, stayed home. Kids, oldest school was canceled. My wife, they closed her office. So she was working from home. And so she worked this morning. And I technically worked this afternoon, and the kids had adult supervision, and we all survived.
Good job.
I was going to say, I'll bet the house felt pretty close today with everybody there.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I wanted to drop some statistics on you, if I could.
Okay.
Okay. This is where I said I should have memorized these better. I can't remember if it was 1940. I believe 1940. So pre-World War II, 1940, only 8% of American households had televisions. But by 1960, any idea what that percentage was?
43.
89%.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot higher than I thought it'd be. I didn't even think 8% would have TVs in 1940.
In 1960, more American households, this is true, had televisions than had indoor plumbing. So this my question for you old farts is, which ones did your houses have?
In 1960.
Stockville, the courthouse in Frontier County, Nebraska, Stockville, Nebraska, where I grew up, not Stockville, but Frontier County, was the last courthouse in the nation to get indoor plumbing in 1962.
Wow.
Do you remember the 50 county, the rundown we went up all the counties? When I did that, I looked at all the other county courthouses and I realized that really bunch of horribly drunk fucking poor people built our courthouse, and they just went out there and started nailing boards together until it became a building. And that's what it looks like. It looks like a horrible, horrible piece of shit compared to all these other nice county courthouses across the nation. You know, and that's going to stay that way forever.
Frontier County, Nebraska. You have a shitty county courthouse, says former resident John Johnston. Put that in the local Frontier County Gazette. Former resident, now internet bigwig, says our courthouse sucks.
You want a quick story about Stockville?
Yes. Yes, I do. Okay. Does it include a play on the name? Does it include you in a stockade?
No.
Oh, I'm not as interested now.
Okay, see, we did this county countdown thing, and somebody, when the pandemic started, all the five people that live in Stockville are going to fucking shoot at me the next time I go home. Somebody at the beginning of the pandemic drove into Stockville, and then they sent me an email about their experience because they went out on the internet and they looked up Stockville and they came across my article. And they sent me this email about how they drove into Stockville and they sent me a photo. And the photo was one of those big signs, you know, where you put the letters in it. And it was something like, have a nice day, get out. you know, or go home or stay away. It was literally like, get out of town. And this woman, there was a bad storm coming and she thought there was going to be a tornado and she was looking for shelter. And there was a woman at a house that she stopped and tried to ask, is there any way, place me and my daughter could go? And the woman kept screaming at her to leave town and get away from them. And I wrote back to her and I said, thank you so much for your story. That is the Stockville I knew and loved. Except we would have a bar down there that we always drank, sometimes illegally at. And then we had the Stockville World Fair, where there were only 60 people that lived in Stockville. But when the county fair was there, it'd grow to like 4,000 people. And they'd have a really good country stars come. And that's my story about
Stockville. I wonder if Frontier County, Stockville in particular, didn't provide some inspiration to the Nebraska Tourism Bureau or board, because maybe that's where they got the inspiration for Nebraska. It's not for everybody. They went to Stockville and saw they get the hell outside. So
we should move on now.
We should. I want to tell everybody that I'm so thankful for the sponsor of this week's show. That's right. And they bring a lot of smiles to my face. I'm happy to give a shout out to the old New Belgium Fat Tire Amber Ale.
That's our sponsor. Excuse me.
It's sponsoring me being able to put up with you two assholes.
I'll have to have my dad watch this episode. That's his favorite beer, Greg.
You should. You should. Yeah. You'll have to tell him what the internet normally is.
Normally, he's the one that knocks on the door and says, could you quiet down in there a little bit? You're getting a little loud.
So he's the equivalent of my son.
Yeah. 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 And probably in more ways than one.
Time out. My son's out of diapers.
I think my dad's out of it.
I don't think he's going to want to watch the show after all.
No, probably not. Scratch that idea.
All right. So as we're recording this very special episode of the Five Heart Podcast, it is National Signing Day. It is February 2nd, Groundhog's Day. Old Punxsutawney Phillip saw his shadow. 6 more weeks of winter. That's why I hate groundhogs. Every day or every year, I hate groundhogs. But it was National Signing Day, where young men could sign their national letter of intent to go play, continue their football careers at various schools. And Nebraska picked up 2 more players today. There was a very accurate, I believe, article on Cornation about how this signing day doesn't mean as much anymore. The first Wednesday of February used to be almost like a holiday. And then however many years back, I don't remember exactly, they said, you know what? We're going to have an early signing period. And it's going to be in December during bowl season with madness and mayhem, chaos and carnage. And so now the first Wednesday of February is just the first Wednesday of February, I think, because between early signing period, the transfer portal, which we talked a lot about last week, we now have a very, I think, complete idea of the incoming class to Nebraska, again, from all different sources, as we'll talk. You know, we have high school graduates, of course, JUCO transfers, and then there's the madness that is the transfer portal. But we did pick up a couple more skill players today, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to kind of recap a little bit of all of the acquisitions, I guess, to the best of our ability. But a couple of, or at least one, and I'll start with one, the running back that I remember seeing, a 4-star running back by the name of A.J. Allen. And yes, before you ask, A.J. is spelled out A-J-A-Y. What do we know about A.J. Allen, guys?
He's fast.
Okay.
He's like the seventh running back on scholarship this year.
Isn't that crazy?
We have a lot of running backs, man.
I feel shifty. Like shifty.
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 So
that's what I hear a guy.
In my, you know, you got to go back over 20 years. But I, of course, I'm a Steelers fan. And my favorite to this day, my favorite football player is Jerome Bettis. You know, he was in his prime when I was there, I say coming of age and really starting to follow football more closely. And I remember I was watching a Steelers game at my friend's house. And, you know, Bettis is a very particular type of runner. He's not going to, you know, be shifty. He's not going to blaze past everybody. And there's one of the more iconic moments in his career, I believe his final season, where they're at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, and he knocks over Brian Urlacher for a touchdown. He was a power runner. And young me in the 90s is at my friend's house, and his dad's like, yeah, there's two types of runners. There's the Jerome Bettis type, and there's the Barry Sanders type. You know, and maybe now we have more in the middle, you know, with the speed and power, like an Adrian Peterson type, you know, that's a hybrid of both. But I've always preferred a power runner. I think, you know, a lot of Nebraska fans, you know, they want that power eye back. But this is the 21st century where it is a speed game. So having good footwork, having good speed is what's going to really help you get noticed and most likely help your team in the long run.
Well, the new running back coach had recruited Allen to TCU. And, you know, I'm going to guess that he was a high priority recruit at that point in time. And then, you know, obviously he's moved to Nebraska now. And so he made every attempt he could to bring along, you know, that running back. So running back's going to be interesting. It's definitely a full room. And, you know, what you read, they might have seven different kinds of running backs on this team. I don't know that they've got anybody that is in that area of Jerome Bettis, maybe Jacquez Yant a little bit. He might be as close to that as anyone, but that will be a very competitive position this spring.
Ramir Johnson, Jacquez Yant, Anthony Grant, new guy, Gabe Irvin, Marquise Stepp, Emmett Johnson, new guy, AJ Allen, new guy. Wow, they really they filled that up. When we looked at what happened to Minnesota and how badly running backs get beat up, I guess, you know, and we lost Gabe Irvin last year. So,
well, we lost Gabe Irvin, Johnson, you know, Ramir got hurt, I believe, as well, and was unable to finish out the season. Having depth at running back, I don't think is a problem. We just got to make sure that, you know, how many of these guys are still going to be here in the fall, you know? What's spring football going to do as far as culling the herd? There, you mentioned a lot of names, obviously, that we are very familiar with, the Johnson, Stepp, Irvin, Yant. I think one more who we should have familiar with, perhaps, maybe not. Maybe the other three are all newbies. But, there's not – anybody that you mentioned that I don't want, you know, getting some time in the backfield. And I feel like I don't know, maybe I hope I don't come across as like wishy-washy or flip-flopping, because I think in the past I've said you need to have one guy who's your guy and be able to, you know, just get, you know, the timing right and let them find their rhythm. But I don't think it's a bad idea to have a lot of options, especially when we're in the offseason. When spring football is the perfect time to figure out who is going to you know, step up and then hopefully not take a step back between April and the end of July, like Jacques Yant did last year. And you know, while he was on a milk carton for the first few weeks of the season.
Maybe they'll keep him in Lincoln and monitor how much he eats.
That's not a bad idea. But to that point, do you think now that he's a year older that he saw the consequences of his actions from a year ago, that maybe they're like, oh, you know, I better lay off the Hostess snack cakes or whatever might be, right? I need to, you know, get to the gym more regularly. Do you think that with that added year comes maturity, or are we still they still, you know, college kids who are, you know, when they're off the leash, so to speak, they're going to do what they do?
I don't know. You know, I mean, he's also the one that apparently disappeared and went home to see family and didn't tell anybody he was leaving town, you know, during the week of, I think that was a Wisconsin game. Who knows? He's just got a tremendous amount of talent, and you'd like to think that a year of maturity would help.
You know what else about all seven of these guys? There's not a single name on that list that I just named that you'd look at and go, yeah, that guy's going to get 1,500 yards. If he was the guy, he'd get us 1,500 yards. You couldn't say that about a single player there. You can say about every one of them, they have a lot of potential, but none of them are Jalen Berger from Wisconsin, right?
Well, I'm gonna stop you right there.
Yeah.
Jalen Berger, whatever.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. He was the guy that he got tossed. He was dismissed. That's the 17-year-old kid. Right. Braylon Allen, was that it?
Right. Yeah, I think so. First of all, who was our last 1,000-yard rusher? Was it Divino Zigbo?
Well, oh, sure.
Right?
I think so.
Okay. Like, I'm not trying to be a smartass. I'm wondering, you know, it's been a few years, right? But Allen, you know, up in Wisconsin has a fairly stable offensive line to run behind. And I think that's, you know, you can look at some of the social media feedback of, you know, all the skill players and all the announcements or, you know, maybe not directly at, you know, the athletic, you know, department or the football programs, you know, direct accounts. But, you know, when there are sites like ours who put a little rundown of who everybody, then the biggest concern I see from a lot of people is, well, we could use some 4-star linemen, you know. 3 offensive linemen are coming into Nebraska, 2 of them from the transfer portal, and 1 of them, John, you were fortunate enough to, or not fortunate, kind enough to share this information with us. 1 offensive lineman from New Jersey by the name of Justin Evans Jenkins, a 6'2" lineman. And then we have the transfer from Oklahoma State, Hunter Anthony, and the transfer from Northern Colorado, Kevin Williams Jr. Those are the offensive linemen that are coming in to help an offensive line unit that wasn't very good and lost one of its more stable individuals in Cam Jurgens going turning pro, which more power to him. I think it's a year early, and I think we've talked about that before, but hey, he got an invitation to the combine, so go do everything you can do, young man, and get every penny you can get.
You're worried about the offensive line,
aren't you?
No, I don't know. Not really. We have a shit ton of guys on the roster, and they're really young. It's going to really be about whether or not they can turn Bryce Benhart into an actual blocker, a guy who actually can move his feet.
But they're young, untested. But to the point, John, you mentioned it might have been you, John. It might have been Todd. I don't know. You guys look alike. but Todd, you need to shave. That's why. But one of you guys, John, it was you, I believe, who raised the concern of do we have a 1,500-yard rusher?
Yeah.
No, but we don't have an offensive line that's going to, you know, help, you know, move the defense so that you can have a 1,500-yard rusher. We don't have an offensive line. Okay.
Donovan Raiola is going to fix all. This is the off season for football. This is when we start drinking the sugary sweet nectar.
I'm drinking.
the everything will be fine.
But we don't. Let's look at recent history. We didn't have an offensive line that allowed our quarterback enough time to be enough of a threat that a defense had to play honest. And I don't think we had the play call in the past that was going to allow for a running back to be as impactful as they could be. We had, right or wrong, we had a quarterback whose destiny up until this, you know, the offseason that we're in, you know, look back 2 months ago, whatever it was, 6 weeks, whose destiny was tied to the head coach, and reciprocally, head coach was tied to the quarterback. Now, Adrian Martinez is gone, but Adrian Martinez was, correct me if I'm wrong, the leading rusher this past year, if not the last.
Yep.
Okay. We cannot rely, and I'm not the first person to say it. I'm definitely, you know, not the smartest guy on this show, let alone on the internet, but we can't have a quarterback be our leading rusher. And whether or not the play call was designed on purpose to make Adrian Martinez, you know, the shining star of the offense, it shouldn't have been. Whether or not he was, you can't have singular focus. You know, this isn't Madden where, you know, if you have a Lamar Jackson or something like that, that you can do everything with him. This is real honest to God football. And so you can't put all your eggs in one basket in the sense that one guy is going to be leaned on to beat the other team. I don't think our play call was diverse or I don't, I'm not trying to say complicated. I think sometimes it was too complicated, but it didn't play to the many strengths and the many weapons that we had. So hopefully going forward, without the crutch of Adrian Martinez, when you have a Casey Thompson coming in, you have plenty of offensive weapons. You have an abundance of riches. It's almost a comedy of riches in the number of skill players you have, as long as you can get the ball in their hands. That's what I want to see. But to say we don't have a 1,500-yard rusher, we didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher. We didn't have an 800-yard rusher, I don't think.
I was putting the bar high.
Well, you need to put the ball reasonable, John.
You have to recognize, too, that the offensive coordinator that you brought in or that Nebraska brought in his team threw the ball 60% of the time. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you won't have a running game or an effective running game. I think too many times the coaching staff last year abandoned the running game way too early in games, way too early. And, you know, that was frustrating. Maybe time will tell. Time will tell if we've got a 1,000-yard rusher.
Which one of these guys is going to have 1,000 yards, Todd?
I think the one that'll be a 1,000-yard rusher was the guy who is the leading running back in the Wisconsin game.
Yant? Who was it?
Brody Belt.
Oh, God. Wow.
Did you do that just for me, Todd?
Just for you.
And that's why I hate you.
John, I don't know. I'm not a recruit, Nick. I don't pay that close attention. But I guess, you know, one of the things that's been baffling to me is, you know, I don't know how to articulate it, but for the last 3 years, I've questioned the decisions that have been made with how they rotate and how they use the running backs. And it seems like there hasn't been a dominating runner, or they haven't given the ball to any running back enough for him, you know, to get in the groove, to, you know, impact the game. I don't remember game by game last year, But we had whoever started the first game of the season didn't start the second game of the season. We saw Jaquez Yount, and then he disappeared. And then all of a sudden, Gabe Irvin emerges, and then he's hurt. And now we've got Ramir Johnson.
Who ran strong and then got hurt.
Yeah. Who knows? There's seven of them. I would like to think they're going to find one that can be a consistent ball carrier, you know, that has good vision, that can get the yards when you need the yards. But as we all know, that's dependent as well upon, you know, the guys up front. Just read today that our two returning tackles are both out for the spring, neither Corcoran or Teddy Pritchett. I'm not going to say his name. Teddy. Neither one of them are going to be available for spring ball. So be interesting to see what shakes down.
I think I mentioned this, you know, in the season when, you know, guys were sitting for reasons, you know, not playing for reasons that weren't necessarily made public. And I, to a point, I understand that, you know, hey, you know, he violated a team rule or something. And so he has to sit, but so many guys at various intervals just went missing. And, you know, they have a lights out game against whomever, and then they don't play the next. You're like, what the hell happened? You know, and if they violated a team rule, you don't have to get into the specifics of it, but, and maybe these questions are being answered on like Sports Nightly or in press conferences, things that I don't frankly have the ability or time to listen to. John, you're shaking your head. No.
There's it's a mystery. Scott Frost gets asked about there. I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay.
I mean, you know, nobody knows why Brody Belt got starts. What the hell? You know, nobody knows why Marquis Stepp just pretty much disappeared. Nobody knows this shit.
I definitely don't know why Brody Belt got starts.
Well, I guess he performed better than everybody else or knew the playbook. Who fucking knows? That's part of the mystery that is Scott Frost. You know, what the fuck you doing? You know, have you guys watched the NFL? Have you guys watched much NFL?
I watched Championship Saturday or Sunday, I mean.
Todd?
I've watched the playoffs very, very close. Some of the best football I've seen in years.
Cincinnati is in the Super Bowl. Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
What is remarkable about that? Just guess for me.
They had a losing record last year. You know, a really bad record last year.
Like four wins or something?
Something horrible. And they've got, a second or a third year head coach. They've got a second year quarterback. It's amazing. They do not have the greatest offensive line in the NFL.
Right.
And
that's the key. Why are they making the Super Bowl? Why are they making the Super Bowl when they don't have an offensive line that can protect Joe Burrow worth a shit? Maybe it's because their fucking offensive coordinator knows how to call passes that get the ball out quick so the quarterback doesn't have to stand there for 5 seconds waiting for his receivers to get 15 fucking yards downfield.
And I think even if it's not necessarily the quick release, Joe Burrow and look, the Adrian Martinez, Joe Burrow decision, you know, whatever has been beat to death. I think I saw on social media this week that, you know, 3 years after that comment was made about, you know, like we've got Adrian Martinez and we think he's the better quarterback. Well, now he's going to be playing at Kansas State and Joe Burrow is going to be playing in the Super Bowl. So, you know, I also understand Frost logic because at that point, Burrow had something like 30 pass attempts in his career. And I'm going to say this right now, and I don't think anybody on this show is going to disagree with me. Joe Burrow comes to Nebraska. He's not going to be the Joe Burrow that we know right now. He might be dead.
That's not where I was going with that.
Okay, carry on.
It wasn't at all. It was the comparison. It was looking at Nebraska's offense. When we called pass plays, there were a lot of times where we knew that we had two tackles that couldn't block a fucking wet paper bag And we still ran routes that took 15 yards or 10 yards down the field to develop. Right. He didn't call, unless he threw those sideways passes, he didn't call passes where Martinez could just get rid of the ball immediately.
You know, John, I think that Scott Frost has a pretty creative mind for developing scheme and plays, but I don't think he does a very good job of calling the game. And I'm hopeful that his contribution to the offense is with scheme and plays, and that Mark Whipple can call a game and put the team in a position to succeed.
I apologize to you men who I respect and whose time I don't want to waste, but also to the listeners. I got off on my own tangent previously. What Cincinnati has done successfully with Joe Burrow is it's either quick release or move him out of the pocket away from pressure to where he has an opportunity for the plays to develop downfield. I wanted to make that point earlier and I got sidetracked. I sidetracked myself, so I apologize to you guys. I don't disagree with you, John, at all.
It's that fucking double hat thing. What are you doing, man? What the hell? What is wrong with you? How many of those fat tires have you had?
He's been home all day.
Been me and the kids, John. The kids.
Hey, we got a 4-star receiver today too. Were you going there next, or did I?
I was going to let you, because I'll be honest, I don't know exactly which one the new one is.
Nebraska picked up a 4-star receiver named Janoran Bonner.
That's who I thought it was going to be. I thought that's who you were going to say.
That name, I love it. That name is cool.
Might be the best year for names. Might be the best name. Best year for names. Janoran, the coldest.
I was going to say, it's not as cool as the coldest Crawford. Ooh. Chubba Purdy.
Chubba. You know, I think Ernest is a good name. You know, Ernest is a – and you know, he's way down the list when it comes to the names.
Let's – Emmett. I mean, look, there have been at least one successful Emmett running back.
Yeah.
You know, we could be the second, you know, and you know what? I'll say this from the walk-on side of things. At least we got a Brady and not another Brody.
I'm going to arrange a meeting with you.
We're going to have to, won't give the young man his due. I tell you.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
We got Ryan Buscemi, and every time I think of that name, I think of Steve
Buscemi.
That guy. Hello, fellow kids.
young people.
Wide receivers have been upgraded significantly.
What did you just say?
Wide receivers.
Oh, you said wide receivers. Okay, yeah. That's not what I thought. I'm sorry.
Wide receivers. That has been upgraded tremendously. With bringing that 4-star kid in today, they brought in Trey Palmer from LSU. They brought in the kid from New Mexico or wherever it is. You know, holy moly, you got those guys to talk about. Where does Omar Manning fit in? Is Oliver Martin, does he even have a chance, you know? What about Xavier Betts? Are they just not good enough?
No, they're all learning the offense together. That's one thing about it.
Well, yeah.
I think Oliver Martin's got to stay healthy, right? And Omar Manning, we hope that we continue to see that he continues to build on some of the bright spots that he had last year. Obviously, you look at the 2020 season, he wasn't around much, and there's been much said or speculated about, you know, why he didn't contribute as much in 2020 or why he wasn't utilized as much. He showed a lot of several bright spots. You know, you look at that touchdown grab in the Oklahoma game, you know, that's a big league catch, you know, against a big league opponent. And, you know, if he can, he's a guy that you hope, you know, all the added talent that's come in, you know, from, you know, the transfer portal or traditional recruiting, that it pushes him to excel and that he doesn't, you know, find a different path. You know, I want, you know, Omar Manning's a guy that I want to see just really hang in there and keep going, because he's going to have, I mean, you talk about the upgrade at wide receiver, Todd, there is a significant upgrade at quarterback, you know? So if we can get the Omar Manning that we all believe is in there, you know, waiting to blossom, waiting to, you know, have his day. If a quarterback like Casey Thompson can pull that type of ability out of him, then what a addition he will remain to be in that wide receiver room.
Who's going to be the 1,000-yard receiver, Todd?
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Trey Palmer.
Why?
Because he's so.
Because he's new.
He's fast.
Okay.
He is fast. He's elusive. Yards after catch will probably make us all forget about that guy that ran off to Kentucky.
Who?
Yeah.
Well, Samari Torrey had 900 yards last season. Austin Allen had 600. So there's 1,400 yards or whatever. Did I do the math right? 1,500 yards of receiving that we need to replace between the two top receivers. So
you got Thomas Fedoni's going to be healthy this year too. Isn't he the top ranked tight end from last year? And then you watch that kid from Georgia that was like the fourth or fifth, makes you think that Fedoni's going to be 1 year and then he'll be in the Pro Bowl the next year.
We still have Vokalek as a tight end, but
go ahead. Here's what I want from Travis Vokalek. I want his hair to be kept at a respectable length where it's just barely covering the stitching on his name on his jersey. I want to see the golden mane, but I don't want it to be too ridiculous.
Why are you more old manish than either of us?
How is that? I said I want the golden mane. I just don't want it to be, you know, like no, not the silver mane.
You're a Steelers fan. You had Troy Polamalu, and you would prefer to be able to read Polamalu on the back of his jersey rather than that incredible mane covering it up.
Polamalu and Vokalek are not the same.
Well, I didn't say it.
Wow.
Although I remember, speaking of Polamalu quickly, there were a couple of times where he would intercept an opposing pass, because that's how interceptions work. Football 101 for you folks listening and watching at home. I remember he got tackled by one of the guys, I think the running back or something, grabbing a fistful of the hair and just pulling it down. I think they issued like a horse collar type tackle for that or penalty. So.
You know,
anyway, that's how I made a simple suggestion, request even. And you guys are gonna jump my ass about it. I think I'm just gonna sit here and be quiet for a while.
No, that you have an opinion, you're entitled to it.
You know what he's doing right now?
He's probably auditioning
for those progressive advertisements where you turn into your dad. What else about today? Anything national signing day?
It doesn't have anything to do with today, but it has to do with just the whole recruiting class. And you've already mentioned it, John. And this I've thought about this after you brought it up earlier. No defensive linemen. And that is concerning to me, because as I think about it, you know, Ben Stille's gone. And then there were two other guys who had a year of eligibility left. I think one was Thomas. Can't remember the other one. Who
Jordan Riley transferred to Oregon.
Right. Okay. And now we just lost the Riley guy. You know, that has me concerned about, you know, what are we going to have for bodies, you know, up front? The defensive line was solid last year. I'm not going to tell you they were great, but they did a good job last year. And, you know, hopefully there's enough depth there and enough young guys that they can,
you think those guys would get as beat up as running backs, and they need a shit ton of them. But yeah, we really didn't. That's probably the biggest concern. I mean, we brought in a lot of experience in the defensive backfield. They brought in a lot of guys to do special teams, you know, and we have a special teams coach who's supposed to focus on it. And we've been told that pretty much everybody will be involved on special teams. And honestly, some of the guys they even brought in as like receivers have had experience returning kicks and things like that. Who was it off the top of my head? With Trey Palmer was one. He scored.
Trey Palmer's one.
He has a punt return and a kickoff return touchdown to his name. And then somebody else, one of the recent ones has, one of the running backs has kickoff returns.
And I think that might have been
one of them was Tommy Hill, the guy from Arizona State. He has kickoff return experience and actually did kickoff returns for Arizona State. Is that you, Greg, or is that a cutout?
It's me. I'm back.
Did you get another beer?
I wasn't going to until Todd suggested it.
I'm drinking vicariously through you.
Want to remind everybody, the show brought to you by Fat Tire Amber Ale from New Belgium.
Well, you know, I think when you look at all this stuff together, all the additions and subtractions, I think it's really bothersome to me. It really bothers me a lot, because now I'm in the same position I was at this time last year. Which is, this is a roster that looks like it should win a ton, shit fucking ton of games. It really should. When you look at this roster compared to every other Big Ten West team, I realize I'm biased. And by the way, Greg, I have now sat here for at least an hour, and you have not even looked around my room or anything, apparently. But I realize I'm biased when I look at our team.
There's a damn Golden Gopher on your, what the fuck are you doing, John?
My Husker blanket is in the wash.
Then you be cold.
The dog needs something to lay on.
Is the dog laying on your bed right now?
No, she's laying right next to my feet.
Then I suggest you get the damn blanket off our screen.
You really want to see what? No. I think that I put the blanket there because otherwise it looks like dead. Well, there was a dead body there. Anyway,
I was going to say dead bodies are a concern.
I mean, when I look at this roster. I look at it and see. I see a roster that should win a whole gob of games, but that's the same thing I saw last year. And it bothers me a lot.
Specifically to that question. Because a lot of people are a lot of head coach Scott Frost detractors, and I'm not counting Todd in this because I know he hates Scott, not personally, but as a coach. But they say, you know, we're going to be given a false sense of confidence because we have a quote unquote weak. Well, we have a weaker schedule. I mean, there's no doubting, you know, last year's schedule was one of the tougher schedules, you know, in the country, and certainly one of the hardest schedules Nebraska's had in the last 10 or so years. There are a lot of people who say, well, you know, Nebraska's going to get this false sense of confidence in Scott Frost because they're, you know, if they have more success against weaker teams. I look at it from and we've talked about this for a couple of years now, sadly. We have a program full of young men who only know what it's like to win a few games. We need, you know, a 6-7-8 win season just to build some internal confidence to help. I say this with all due respect to obviously everybody sitting here, everybody at Corn Nation and all Husker fans, but to hell with the fans. We have to have a team, a program that believes that it can get the job done. You know, we've seen, you look at last year, and last year reminded me a lot of Mike Riley's first year. You know, I think he went 3-9, something like that. But a lot of them were one score games. A lot of them were, God dang, if the ball just bounces a little bit different. You know, we had that season opening, I believe it was season opening loss to BYU, you know, via Hail Mary. John, I know that game is particularly fun for you to try to think back to.
Oh, it's just freshly dead then.
I was going to say, and anybody who wants to know more about that should read John's book, Been Dead, Never Been to Paris, available on Amazon.com. But that's what a lot of, you know, we lost 9 games, and we lost 8 of them by one score or less. And the other game that we lost to, I believe that was the Ohio State game, we lost by 9, you know, I mean, it was right there. We had a series of we had a season of games last year that at the end of the day could have gone either way. And if, certainly we wish, like, why couldn't they have, you know, the Michigan State game is a classic example. The Michigan game with, I'll say it fully biased. How do you not blow the whistle when Adrian Martinez is stopped moving forward and then the ball comes free and is picked up and taken the other way? You know, that could have been a loss of forward momentum. Nebraska maintains possession and continues, you know, their possession. We had a ton of games like that. We also just had some bonehead errors in games. The first score against us last year was the safety against Illinois on the punt to Cam Taylor-Britt that he tried to throw, you know, on the punt return.
Right.
So we
it was a
we
did moment.
A lot of it was self-inflicted. But we were in there on so many games that I wonder if, you know, 2022 is going to be the opposite of that. You know, like, we're going to come out ahead on a lot more of those close decisions. I guess what I'm trying to say is where we are, you know, this year compared to last year, the talent is still there. My question being, and God dang, I took the longest possible way of asking it, is, do you think with the weaker schedule this year, if Nebraska is more successful, that there's going to be this false sense of confidence in Scott Frost or do you think that the changes have been made internally that will be stronger based on the staff changes, the personnel that's in place, both on the coaching staff and on the field? Sorry,
Todd,
I'll hang up and let you guys answer that question.
Do you want me to go first, Todd?
Sure.
Okay, well, that's the big question. You brought all these guys in. You got a whole shitload of really good, what looked like really good players out of the transfer portal. You put together, like I said, a roster that should be built to win a crap ton of games, and it's all going to be about whether or not this coaching staff on the offensive side of the ball is going to gel together and actually coach and you know, work together, because – I don't know if the last one did that well, especially on offense. And I've said this since Scott Frost came to Nebraska. I expect his offense to score 35 to 40 points a game. That's not, you know, years ago, that would be a high. That was, I think, what was it? One of our Nebraska teams set the record for scoring for game. And was it 95 maybe at 42? But those days are gone. If you want a really good offense, it should be scoring, let's say, 38 points a game. And I think we've averaged around like 20 to 20, well, not 20, but probably 24, 25 points a game. So, you know, you take care of the defensive line problem by having an offense that can score a lot all the time when they need to. You know what I mean? You get out in the red zone and you punch the ball in and you don't have to worry about kicking field goals. And is this coaching staff going to be able to do that? Is this too early for me to trust them? Do I want to just start drinking the Kool-Aid here? And oh my God, it's February. Or do I have to, what am I supposed to do with this? That's what I want to know. What do I do with this, Todd?
Well, I think that what you do with it is just wait and see. I don't think that there's any, I'm not a Kool-Aid drinker. I've never been the Kool-Aid drinker. The only way that we're going to know anything about this team is going to happen over in Ireland. And, you know, if the first time they set foot out on the field, you know, are they going to be successful? And I just don't think that, you know, the spring, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, in the spring, I believe that there is probably going to be more intensity and more focus on getting this offense up to speed on Coach Whipple's offense than any previous year. They've brought in so many transfers, guys with the experience. I really don't think it's going to be a developmental spring for a lot of players, you know, like it typically has been. I think they're going to take advantage of most of the practices that they have, get that offense installed so that they can hit the ground running when they come back in the fall. Can this team win, you know, 6, 7, 8 games? Last year's team could have. The team the year before could have. Coulda, woulda, shoulda, ifs and buts, candies and nuts. You know, it really doesn't matter, you know, what we think can happen right now. It's what's going to happen in the fall and what does happen in the fall. I hope Nebraska wins, you know, 7, 8, 9 games. That would be great. It'd be a fun season if that can happen.
You know what, Todd, I'm going to interrupt you there, and I apologize. I don't like interrupting, but you hope Nebraska wins 7, 8, 9 games. I hope Nebraska wins 13. Just saying. I think I'm a better fan than you.
Well, I you won't be the first one that believes that.
I'm just kidding.
But, you know, it's and if they do well and Nebraskans feel good about the team, that's what it's all about. And I think the thing and I've kind of developed this, you know, in the last week or so. The reason I want to see, well, there's many reasons I want to see the team succeed and be a winner, but I want this team to be successful because I'm really curious what the recruiting class of 2023 is going to look like and 2024, because you turn Becton loose, Bush loose, Joseph loose. I mean, holy smokes with what they Travis Fisher loose. And apparently Scott Frost is a decent closer. You get those
guys in there with all those moms, you know.
Well, there you go. Who knows? You know, it might be. It's exciting to think about that. But this team has to win 7 or 8 games at a minimum to bring the caliber of player in that
8.
I think these coaches can.
It's not 7 or 8. It's 8. They have to contend for the Big Ten West next season. That's it. If nothing else, it should be accepted.
I don't disagree.
Dispute that.
I don't disagree.
What else we got? We got anything else?
I don't know if we're ready to talk about it. I don't know if we have more to talk about regarding signing day, the recruiting class. Look, we highly encourage everybody just, you know, stay up to date. Everything that happens, coronation.com. If we didn't specifically discuss every new acquisition to the Nebraska football program here on this show, we have at coronation. So, you know, you can do a little bit of the work. Quit being so damn lazy. No. I didn't know women's basketball. We need to get Jill back on here in a week or two to give us updates, but they have a freshman, a perennial freshman Big Ten player of the week, or maybe just flat out Big Ten player of the week. I don't know, but Markowski, I believe, is proving her mettle at the biggest stage of her career thus far, and is holding her own exceptionally well. The Nebraska women, I think, John, I think you made the comment that nobody necessarily wanted to win that game. I believe it was Nebraska Rutgers, final score of 50 something to 38. Buckets were hard to come by, but Nebraska ended up finding a way. So yeah, we'll need to get Jill on. She's definitely the more educated voice when it comes to Nebraska women's basketball. The men, they've been close. I don't know if that's progress for them or if they're at a point where they're, you know, playing competitions, playing down to their level as out of charity. But they've been close here a couple of times. So, you know, Rutgers could have been a win. Michigan could have been or should have been a win the last two games here. So all we can do is hope that eventually this bad luck streak will end, or maybe they're just saving it all to unload a win after win after win when they get to the Big Ten tournament and then go on from there. Because it doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. If you win the tourney, you're going dancing. That's all I'm saying. So that's a lot of high hopes. Baseball's not terribly far away. I know that because a local minor league stadium that's honestly about 10 minutes from my house, I saw Facebook ads today that they are hosting bragging rights again. Bragging rights, for those of you not in the land of Lincoln or the Show Me State, is Illinois Mizzou. And it started out as basketball, typically a week or so before Christmas. And they always play that game in St. Louis. Well, apparently they've done it for baseball as well. So GCS Stadium, which, as I mentioned, is very near to my house, we'll be hosting Bragging Rights between Missouri, Illinois on March 29th. And I'm considering going. It's a Tuesday, and so far I don't have anything planned. A little college baseball. So that just means that Nebraska baseball is, you know, that much nearer for us, and looking forward to what Will Bolt has for, I believe, his second season?
Third.
Well, third Thank kind
you.
Of.
Thank you.
Kind of.
You know, third that he's been in Lincoln, but, you know, the COVID year, he didn't really get to do much.
Right.
Baseball really needs to save us. They really do.
That's what we got. Women's basketball. We got women's bowling, volleyball. And now you're just so demanding, John. We have all these wonderful women's sports that are carrying the banner. Why can't the women have their day? Why can't the women?
Because I'm a male chauvinist pig, you motherfucker. God damn it.
I didn't have much else. I wanted to mention that briefly, the Winter Olympics have started, and they decided to start tonight in what? Minnesota.
Oh.
Between U.S. men's national soccer team and Honduras, where apparently, allegedly, this is from Grant Wall, two Honduran players were treated for hypothermia in that game in St. Paul, Minnesota. Two.
It would not surprise me. It looked horrible.
So.
Well, it was -4 when I went to work this morning, so it warmed brutal. Up. It was a heat wave to, like, I think it got up to 9. So,
I was reading that thread on Twitter here after I got my second beer. Thank you, Todd, for reminding me. And apparently there are rules that say under extreme conditions, you're supposed to either postpone the game or move it, find someplace indoors, something like that. But, you know, Honduras is much closer to the equator. So I figured that the U.S. men's national team thought we need as much help as we can get. So we're just going to make these guys freeze. That's apparently what they did.
Well, apparently one of the U.S. players, he tweeted out and said, word to everything I love, I am retiring next time we have to play in weather like this.
So, I don't blame him.
Holy moly.
I thought it was a U.S. bank. I guess. Wow. That is, that's a little drastic. Yeah. And I mean, that's the reason why we have, you have hockey on ice, but everybody, you know, wears gear and shit. Soccer and -5, or I think it was 0 when you texted me or something. If it was 0 when you mentioned,
they said it was negative wind chill is what they said.
Oh yeah. 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 Any wind chill whatsoever is so freaking horrible up here in the cold.
Well, John, I don't know how close you follow hockey, but the Winter Classic was up in Minnesota, Minneapolis, between the Wild and the Blues. I watched that game because, of course, I'm a avid Blues fan. And, you know, that was very cold as well. So that's why I don't live in Minnesota, ladies and gentlemen. Like, years ago, I don't know if I've ever told the story on the podcast, but in 2016, right around Memorial Day, my wife and I and our, you know, of course, then he was 6 months old, but our 6 year old now, we went to Omaha for almost a week. My wife had a job interview out at Omaha Children's Hospital. And, you know, God, we thought it was going to be very likely we might be moving. We met with a realtor. We were looking at some houses out in that area, drove to Lincoln, met some friends for dinner at Laszlo's there in the Haymarket area. But while my wife got an offer, it wasn't as lucrative as, you know, I think she had hoped. And, you know, as a woman who knows her worth, she's like, nah, that's not going to work. But I also had cold feet because all our family's all right here. But days like today, when it's freezing rain for 10 to 12 hours and, you know, colder than a witch's, you know what, get me thinking, like, you know what? Arizona's pretty warm, right? and I realized that all regions of the country have their own, climactic events. You know, like I wouldn't want to live in Florida because that's hurricanes in Florida. I wouldn't want to live any further north than I do because I don't like to be cold, but I don't want to be in Tornado Alley necessarily. I'm like, Arizona, New Mexico, maybe some sandstorms. I don't know exactly what weather conditions they have out there. So it's, you know, it's been a thought. Maybe someday when I get to retire, I'll go someplace in the Southwest.
It's going to get really hot with climate change, and then everybody would be wanting to come up here. It would be just like building fences, building walls.
Keep them out of Minnesota.
Stay that roast down there by yourselves, you sons of bitches.
Now, I have seen, and I'm sure you all have as well, Roland Emmerich's, and I believe he's got a new movie coming out, like Moonfall or something like that, but his movie Day After Tomorrow with Jake Gyllenhaal and others about a massive climate event worldwide that freezes most of the Northern Hemisphere. And people are scrambling to get into Mexico. I'm just going to leave that one there. But I would not want to be anywhere involved where like the world is freezing as I'm walking down the street. No, thanks. I don't like being cold.
Are we just going to during the off season here at some point, just delve into politics?
No.
You fucking chicken shits.
And I'll tell you why. I don't read enough. I don't read enough to be educated because I don't care. It doesn't matter if they have an R or a D behind their name. They're not out for our best interests. They're out for themselves and for their careers. And it doesn't matter. it doesn't matter. If this is the only thing I ever say about it, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. We're all fucked. And I'm going to keep drinking while I'm here.
We should probably end there before Todd rebuts with his commie attitude about shit.
I don't know if Todd could necessarily disagree with what I just said.
No.
Are you going to let him?
It's February.
They can't hear you on a podcast when you raise your hands in capitulation, you fucking pansy.
No.
Todd obviously feels that. All right. John's waving us home. He's waving us around third.
Waving us around, yeah.
All right. Before I get myself into any further trouble by sticking said foot in said mouth, I want to thank from the very deepest portions of my heart, Todd Wolverton, as always, for joining us. Todd, don't ever change.
I'll try hard not to change.
And as always, John Dam Johnston, our founder, fearless leader, for being the gentleman and the scholar that you are. I thank you.
Gentleman.
And scholar. Okay, I mean, if I'm going to lay it on thick,
I'll go with those.
If I'm going to lay it on thick, I'm going in with both feet. So. And definitely for you, the listener slash viewer, we have a new home on YouTube courtesy of John Johnston. So find us on Coronation Podcasts. You can subscribe there, get all of our podcasts. And Patrick says he doesn't want to do video. So we'll just find images to put up for his face and continue to put them up on YouTube anyway. Any other videos, podcasts that come down the pipe, we'll make sure we share them with you there. As always, we appreciate your comments, your feedback. We just appreciate you listening, telling people about what we do here at Coronation, be it the podcast, the site. Thank you for how many years now has Coronation been around, John? 15?
Yeah, 15 and a half. I think it'll be 16 this August.
We couldn't do it. Coronation is nothing without you, the reader, the viewer, the listener. So thank you. And that's look, I'm thankful to these guys here, and I mean it sincerely. I'm thankful to you at home, at work, in the car, wherever you might be as well. So for all of us, I'm Greg Mahochko, reminding you this week and every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. John?
Go Big Red.
Todd?
Go Big Red.
See, and he didn't say go Big Blue.
Okay.
I'll edit that last part out, Todd. You're okay.